We can be seated. Got my notes organized here. You can be thankful for this. I was looking to get them printed yesterday, and I so Brother Steve was helping me at his house, and we printed the first set off, and the text was pretty small, so we expanded the text, and it went from 4 pages to 7 pages. So thankfully, I'm back on 4 pages here today. But it's good to be back here. Sadly, it's been a long time, but I'm glad for the opportunity. And really, the benefit of just sitting under the Word. It's like we desperately need it. But, you know, just coming back, you look around and I see a lot of familiar faces. And sometimes it's not so easy putting a name on the faces. But I think the last time I was here, we had our first service at the convention was a memorial service for Brother D, which really was quite moving. So that tells how long it's been for me. And I know what I've been through in that period of time. And you look around and you see all that's happened. We at our New Year's gathering, you know, the question came up, what's the most significant thing that you think God is doing presently? And I had to think about it. I wasn't wanting to respond with some canned answer. But what really came to me, that God is really assembling his army and getting his people where he really wants them. Mm-hmm. And that's happened here in recent years, obviously. And we've had some slimming down at our place, too. But knowing what it's taken to get you here and to keep you here, you wonder, it's like, what are you still doing here? It's like, what? Why are you here? It's like, and we come back to the conclusion that where else can we go?
Yeah.
Right. You really have the words of life. And I'm going to talk about our vision here today and the significance of it and the need to safeguard it. And I'll qualify this because we have one in our midst that does not see naturally. And Brother Vinny, I don't want to pontificate up here. If you have something to add any point along the way, please feel free to step in there. But I feel like there is a need for strong vision in our midst. And our vision really in many ways frames our future. What we keep before our eyes really holds power. You know, you can look at somebody's eyes. I see an old, not old, but older, elderly crowd. We have them as well. But the light has not gone out in your eye. It's like there's something you can see in somebody's eye when they got a hold of something, when they really have a vision. You can connect. You see it in their eyes. And their eyes tell a lot. You can also see what else has gone on. You can see if somebody's in darkness, it shows in their eyes as well. But we understand this. You look at the significance of advertisement. They understand that what you see, you know, is where you go. Look at the Google ads. They know my downsitting, my uprising. Before there's a thought, they know. You look at one little thing, you know, one little thing you're looking to buy, and the next time you open up, I mean, you're just flooded with input. It's like, how do it know? So they understand the significance of vision. And I think it's important to keep our eyes protected. And I haven't always done that. If you've ever had something in your eye, even the smallest thing, it can really be a nuisance. I got a piece of metal in my eye one time, and it was a very painful weekend. You knew it. And I'm a bit more cautious now about my eyes. I am about my ears. Sadly, Fortunately, I'm able to hear because I wear hearing aids. And for a number of years, I was very casual about sound. Yeah. I just didn't, like, either no one told me, I didn't get the gravity of it, until it was too late. Yeah. But I'm onto it with my vision. Sure. I run table saws. I'm pretty careful about what I, you know, let in my eyes. It's hard to get it back once you lose it. But I got to thinking, in the natural, you know when there's something in your eye. I don't know spiritually, though. I don't know if we're so quick to know along the way where we really have lost our vision. I think you can lose your vision subtly and you don't know it. And it's punctuated in my mind's eye. Most recently, there's number of people, we have several at our farm, that are fighting a war just to keep their vision. Brother John, hey, brother, good to see you. John Basiliga just had a procedure done for his eyes. But I was with Brother Bill a week and a half ago, and prior to this appointment, he was told he's going to have surgery on his eye for the pressure. And so he went to this appointment, which I took him and Sister Betty to, thinking that's going to be the direction. And they come out of it, and his pressure, right, was just where it needed to be. No talk of surgery. Right. Keep praying for his vision, though. Yeah. But to me, it's like, thank you, God. You know, we're getting some help here with our vision. We're getting some help with our vision. Are you going to... David's word was very powerful and anointed. Obviously, you could feel a touch of God in it. You know, and the point about the grasping power of God. Don't lose that. But that's got to be something that you know. You can't always feel that grasp. Be nice when you can. But you have to have an understanding and a perception of God that though you cannot at all times... or even presently, what you may be walking through, you're not able to feel that grasp. But there's got to be some knowing and some view of God that will keep you through those times that you know He's going to keep you. He's kept you in the past, He will keep you. What we keep before our vision and our view really holds power. And you think about this, you know, today. I like to have something to look forward to. And, you know, what you look forward to, and you keep in your frontlets, keep in your vision, right? If it's something you really want to do and you're excited about, we had a couple most recently that took a trip down to Costa Rica. And for weeks, all they were talking about and just was this trip. I mean, they were so excited about it. What you keep out before your eyes really holds power. Yeah. And you have a lot of energy for. Mm-hmm. You have you plan for it. You do a lot for it. You fight for it. You protect it. Right? Think about it. I want us to think about our vision today and the significance of it. That's the main point here. And how, if we've lost or drifted in our vision, how to recover that. Because it's so needful to keep that vision clear in our mind's eye. Was it Moses? Someone said, was it Brother Joe said at our place, 120 years, his eye was, after 120 years of age, his eye was not dim. That's a high watermark to shoot for. Okay? None of us. Anybody 120 yet? Some getting close, but we have no excuse. Obviously, the things that you have out ahead of you that may not be so pleasant, maybe be dogging you, they weigh on you, you're not so much looking forward to. You know what happens? If you really don't frame that correctly and get a hold of it, it takes your energy, doesn't it? It just brings dread. I hate looking to something and being left with the impression of dread. Something is not right with this picture. You know, something is not right. So it's really important what we keep out there. This is in the New American Standard. I read this. This is Virtuous Woman, Psalm 31. It says, or Proverbs 31, excuse me. Strength and dignity are her clothing. And she smiles on the future. Do you smile? Think about it. Is the bulk of your efforts and the bulk of your energies spent smiling on the future? Sparkle plenty right here, and I'll take it. She's smiling on the future. Brother Paul encouraged me last night greatly. He's smiling on the future. If you want to be encouraged, I mean, I haven't been here through the process all you have been through with our brother, but he certainly strengthened me in the vision, you know, what he's been through and how he's framed this thing and how he sees what God's taken him through. He's not a victim.
Right.
She frames the future and she's able to smile on it. And I'm jealous for that kind of a heart. And there's been times in my life when I have really had to, like, prophesy that to myself. I'm gone for this. And I have to say, if you're not able to smile on the future, this little footnote here, own up to it. Don't blame somebody else for that. If you're looking ahead and there's dread, it's not somebody else's fault. And ultimately, we point the finger at God. Okay, it's I got to take the responsibility for it. It's very difficult at times finding happiness and finding joy in yourself, but I will say this, it's almost impossible to find it outside of yourself in terms of having something outside of you to look forward to. It's going to drive you along. It's going to sustain you. God gives us things along the way that we look forward to, but they really are not there. They're not going to do it.
Right.
You know, whatever you have that you may be looking forward to, just try to filter it through the eyes of the Holy Spirit. Make sure it has some kind of significance and shift your focus onto that. Even the convention here, you know, God may want to meet us here today and you can be looking past it. I'm talking about now. It's like, I got to get a hold of this right now.
Yes.
It's this afternoon, tomorrow. I'm looking forward. I've passed through Uppsala, never been there. I'm looking forward to that. I'm going on to Maine. But I tell you what, I don't want to miss what's happening right here today. And I think we all have areas that we need to see and understand what God is doing. It's like we go through things and it's painful when you don't understand it. I mean, very difficult situations. Where we find ourselves, I really need to know, God, what are you saying? What are you doing in this situation? In the absence of that, you can really be frustrated. And you can frustrate, for a time, the purpose of God. I mean, just resisting. Because you lack the vision. You don't have the right view and perception of really what God is doing in this matter. And it takes a process at times to unfold where you really can see what he's doing. And once you see what God is doing and you get lined up with it, however long it takes to play out, it really is insignificant because you really have come to a place of peace because, you know, you're really in the hands of God. And all the questions, they don't seem to matter because, you know, he's got a grip on you. In Habakkuk 2, it says, I will stand my watch, set me on the tower, and I will watch. That means to lean forward. Peer into the distance. To watch what he will say. Interesting here. To watch, to see. See what he will say.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's the key here. To be able to see what God is saying. Uh-huh. It's not just your ears. Big part of it. I'm thankful for the help that I have. Naturally and spiritually. But there is a need to get up. And watch and see what God is saying to me and how I shall answer when I am reproved of him. And honestly, be honest, I think there are times when we're not so certain we really want to see what God is saying. You may not want to hear so clearly. You find yourself a little hesitant before it's like, show me, Lord. It's like, you know why? It's a reproof. The little apprehension about what it might mean. The way to see really is to totally abandon and let God show. Let the chips fall, Lord, whatever it takes. I want to get up on my watch. Looking around Steve's house, he's got these nice mounts. Harold had some, Geraldine's house there. I come from a family of hunters as well, but I'm not a big hunter. But the last buck I got, okay, I was up on a treehouse. And I'm not used to hunting from a treehouse. But what happened, I'm watching, and I had an idea of where this deer, I thought, would come from. They were putting on a drive, all right? I had it in my mind's eye. Here is where I'm going to see it. And that thing came out of nowhere. And sadly, I got a poor shot off. And I ended up getting it, but I've never forgotten because I really felt somewhat degraded because all my relatives were there and we chased this thing all around. All because I really had a mind frame of what I was to see and how I was to see it. When you get up on your watch, folks, just open your hearts, open your minds. Don't limit how you think it should come. You don't know. This word is famous, really, in a way, for us. Yeah. Sister Diana Harper brought it on a Saturday morning about getting on your watch, seeing what he will say, how I will respond when I'm reproved. That evening, our whole generator and power system went out, just burned down to the ground. It's like, this is not a good thing when you lose power. It's like lightning struck. Hit the mark. And fortunately, we needed it, though. Honestly, we did, and the Lord upgraded our whole power system as a result of it. So I'm thankful for that. But when you're on your watch, don't limit. Don't project. Because you can look for something. All right? And really miss the obscure thing that God really wants to show you. I'm going to keep moving here. Proverbs 25, it's the glory of God to conceal a thing, but the honor of kings is to search out a matter. I love that. It's the honor of kings to search out a matter. Frequently, you know, his ways more and more. I can't get up here and say, you know, I'm seeing better. I'm hearing more clearly. I know what God's doing because the further on I go, the less I think I know. And the less I'm really able to really discern and sort. And he doesn't make it easier to hear. You know, he's got to stretch us out so we really look. He obscures frequently what he is really doing. I'm always nervous when someone says, God told me this, God told me that, God told me this. He doesn't do that with me. Not that he can't do that. But frequently to us, what he's doing in his ways are really more obscured than we care to think. And we've got to get in and dig in. Now, I get this out of the way. This is Oswald Chambers. Don't you love Oswald Chambers? The way somebody else says what you can't, and it's very profound. But he says, God never speaks to us in dramatic ways, but in ways that are easy to misunderstand. Then we say, I wonder if this is God's voice. Isaiah said, the Lord spoke to him with a strong hand. Some of us, it takes a strong hand. That is, by the pressure of circumstances. Without the sovereign hand of God himself, nothing touches our lives. Do we discern his hand at work? Or do we see things as mere consequences? And that line caught my attention. Because his words are obscured. But if we'll look and take what he gives, we'll see. And frequently, it comes through the pressure of circumstances. What you're going through, everything coming in, it really connects together. God has a purpose in it. Proverbs 29. Where there is no vision, says in the King James, the people are restrained, or the people perish. Excuse me. Says in this other version I'm reading, New American Standard, it says they are unrestrained. Without a vision, the people are unrestrained.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay? And that means to loosen, to go back. To go back. Or to expose. Make naked. Okay? In the absence of strong vision, folks, you become unrestrained. You can see when somebody loses their vision. Not just this. It can be for a number of other reasons. But it's been my experience. First thing that they do is cast off restraint. And I don't mean just leaving a context, your community. I mean, it can happen right in our midst. It's only by strong vision will we really narrow in and keep ourselves in the proper restraint. Mm-hmm. Has that been your experience? Mm-hmm. You understand that, I believe. It says here in Hebrews 10, similar passage, but call to remembrance the former days in which after you were illuminated or enlightened, ye endured a great fight of afflictions. And I can really remember back. David talked, how many days his trip to Huna? 40 days? Is that from Massachusetts? Where? That's a long time. I mean, you have to have something out ahead of you to endure that. And you think about your own experience when God illuminated you. And I'm going back, okay? But I'm not just going back. I want you to think also, anytime God illuminates you, anytime you see something, when you know you've been going through something and all of a sudden something connects and you say, aha.
Yeah.
It's like it sustains you. And you push everything else aside for the sake of that vision. I mean, we had a vision in Claremont even before we came with this ministry. We felt like the Lord spoke to us. I think we first started the school. This is in the mid-70s.
Right.
My point here is where there's a strong vision, you make tremendous sacrifice. In the absence of vision, you and I find ourselves unwilling to make a sacrifice anymore. We don't want the restricted lifestyle. We're all done with this way, for whatever reason. In the absence of really having something out ahead of you that is God. You can't you see in somebody's eyes when they are really connecting with the Spirit of God? It's like there's something in their eyes that says, I'm going somewhere. I'm going somewhere. Anyway, and this has been my experience, what we went through, and you know, you all have your own story. But we, we sold our homes, let go of things. It's like, wildly almost. Not irresponsibly, hopefully, but just like, it did not matter. You know, we went through a time, through making a transition to this covering, to this ministry, where in short order, right, we lost half our church. 100 people. We lost half of our eldership. And you know, it hurt, obviously, when you lose people. But there was something else inside of us that we were gone for, and it didn't matter. In fact, we had tried to buy property down there, never worked out. And the more serious we got about moving in the community, the more people peeled off. And fortunately, we come this way. Somebody had enough wisdom to send John Clark was the first person our way. What I remember, and Gary Raymar. And that was... Was it not? At least my exposure.
Yeah, it was Joe.
Yeah. Brother Joe.
Yeah.
Well, you're responsible for us, so we can blame you too a little bit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Praise the Lord.
Then came Doug McLean. Now, how many know Doug and remember Doug McLean? I mean, he painted quite a picture for us.
Oh, boy.
And at the time, we were really starting to consider maybe we should come to Alaska. And I can remember clearly, he says, There's 10-foot diameter trees there. The bag boys at the local grocery store, he said, earned $15 an hour. This was in the mid-70s. I've never found either one of those yet. He said, I can still remember my wife. We were coming this way, and we had a one-year-old still in diapers, okay? And we were, you know, it looked like it was going to happen. And he's telling you stories about what they went through in the early days. And he says, yeah, it was so cold around the fire, and we were doing our pancakes. He says, while the bottom was cooking, the top was frozen solid. You know. So my wife says, well, you know, how do the ladies change a diaper? You know, she's thinking. And I never forgot his answer. He says, ah, the kids do fine. It's the lady, the woman you got to worry about. Next question, you know, he moved on. Anyway, what really helped us most of all was Brother Fred when he came through. He brought the heavenly vision, you know, not disobedient to the heavenly vision. And he brought it down to earth and really made more sensible transition, you know. And what he left us with, going this way, you need three things. You need food, you need money, and what? A good rocking chair. Anyway.
Never seen that rocket show.
No. How's your vision today? You know, I think, honestly, just the word, it is becoming clearer, and you can see behind us, and just those that share in our midst, there's a real clear vision. But though it lights the way, I can't live off somebody else's vision, can you? You got to really make it your own. And I don't think it's any less significant today, the need for it, than what it was for some of you 40 years ago. But we do cast off restraint in the absence of vision. And to restore the vision, this is the next point I want to make, you got to bring some restriction into your life. It's not a matter of adding, what more can I do? It comes a time when you need to really do less. You know, when Jesus, it's in Mark 8, when he healed the blind guy, the first thing he did was lead that guy out of town. And there is a need to get out of town. And it doesn't say, most places, you know, if the multitude follows, it makes that reference point. Here, it doesn't say that. It just says he took him by the hand and led him out of town. And if you're not seeing clearly, talk about humility. It's very humiliating to be led. But if you're in a time of darkness, don't try to find your way out. We were on a mountain hunting one time, and the clouds come in, and just honestly, you could talk about feeling it. It was just, you could not find your way around. What a mistake to try to get back to find your way when you really can't see. You're better off to wait. But you have to be led. I don't know how God can do that, but that's the first thing on the way to restoring and rekindling the vision, is a willingness to be led. Like, I don't know. It's not in me to know the way to go. And I thought of a seeing eye dog. And I had to do a little research to even to understand. Seeing eye dogs are very significant to people that need them. They say it can help with your health because it's a lot less stressful when you have a guide like that. And also, you're able to get out and walk more. You're not as prone to stay in because of fear. And again, I don't know what I'm talking about. I have never been in that kind of a situation. So, Lord, help me here. But they also know the right path when they're trained, much better than a cane. A guy walked into a store with his seeing eye dog, and he hoisted it above his head, spun it around, and the owner of the store comes over and says, what are you doing? He says, I'm just having a look around. And that's... But that's what a guide really does. I mean, it sees for you. It sees for you. This is an article I read a while back, and it's really stuck with me. I better read this. I will read something from Brother Oswald here. I'm talking about to restore the vision. It takes restriction. Getting out of town. Okay? And when he got along with Jesus, you know, he touched his eyes. And it wasn't a one-shot deal, by the way, right? He spit. Is that where he spit in his eyes? What you see?
Yep.
He saw men as trees and then restored his vision. It didn't come in one fell swoop. Be okay with the process that God takes you and I through to really restore our vision.
Yeah.
When you've lost your way or when you're out of, it's like out of concert, a little bit out of balance. You don't know what is God really doing. The transition time in your life can be very difficult, very stressful. That's the time really to concentrate. He says here, the greatest difficulty spiritually is to concentrate on God, and His blessings are what make it so difficult. Troubles almost always make us look to God, but His blessings tend to divert our attention elsewhere. The basic lesson of the Sermon on the Mount is to narrow all your interest until your mind and your heart and body are focused on Jesus Christ. Look unto me. We will find what we're looking for if we will concentrate on Him. We get distracted from God and irritable with Him while He continues to say, look to me and be saved. Our difficulties, our trials, and our worries about tomorrow all vanish. I'll have to take that at face value. But I did, when I come in here, the song we were singing this morning, Turn Your Eyes. I like that song, Turn Your Eyes Unto Jesus. But there's a need to really restrict and focus. Sadly, I guess I found this out. I had a colonoscopy a few days back. And I thought they were going to send the results to my local doctor. And let me read this first, actually. This is another article. I'll come back. I don't know if I'm going to share this. Sometimes you wonder, is it okay? Is it not? This is an article out of CNN. Just to give you a little intermission here. It's talking about how to be successful in anything you do. If we're going to put the time and effort into this way, we ought to give it our best shot. And you think, have you said, what more are you wanting from me? What more do you want me to do? What more? You know, what more? And I really believe it's not about what more. Think about this. It's about what less in your life. A cluttered life is quite a distraction to your vision. What can you restrict? What can you eliminate that's going to really empower the vision in your life? It says 13 things to give up to be successful. Sometimes to become successful and get closer to the person we become, we don't need to add more things. We need to give up some of them. Give up multitasking. You will never reach, this is a hard one. I mean, you look everywhere you go, you know, we're all guilty. Any little intermission, we're on our phones, and people don't like that. Most people don't. It's like, if you're wise and somebody's on their phone, you just will stop engaging them till they realize, hey, it's not about you. I'm here. Yes?
Richard.
Okay. The king of multitasking.
This is what we do. At home, we two or three of us will bounce.
I'm good with it.
I have found that, my wife, no, I can stay here. I don't want you to go away. I have found that multitasking is really a myth and a mortal sin. That's what my wife taught me.
You don't sound convinced.
Well, was there a lot of anointing on that? No, he can get a lot of things done, multitasking. Some of us can do it. Most of us really are ineffective when it comes
Everybody
right down to it.
Everybody.
Anyway, watch the use of your phones. Just for simple. I mean, it blocks concentration. You're going to miss something that might be more significant. This says, give up multitasking. You will never reach your destination if you stop to throw stones at every dog that barks. That's Winston Churchill. Successful people choose one thing and then beat it into submission. No matter what it is, a business idea, conversation, a workout, whatever it is. One thing. Think about it. How many need to get back to one thing?
Yeah.
One thing will I seek.
Right. Yeah.
Now back to the colon. You can't wait for this, right? I'm kind of a personal guy, really.
Yeah,
people
really.
That know me is like, this is bold for me. But I didn't even like the idea of doing this. I was supposed to do this a year ago, but I put it off. So. Anyway.
There'll be no laughing out here.
Yes.
Well, contain yourselves.
I call in to my doctor, and the person that did the test was supposed to send the results. That this nurse says, we never got them. Can you fax them in to me? It's like, that just made me cringe. Because I got 4 pages of all these pictures with description. And she wants me to fax them in. Okay. I can just looking at the fax machine, you know, I went through that. And I waited for the confirmation. You know, I don't. You know, the confirmation comes through. It says okay, but it has what you sent there too, the first page of it. And I was in the middle of the packing and trying to, you know, I was a little nervous. A 3-week trip, you know, so I hurriedly was writing things down to get this ready to send to her. And this was Tuesday, and I left Wednesday. The next morning, it must have been Monday. Anyway. I actually was praying, and I get a call from this lady, and she says, I got your fax. You got my fax? It came to you? Here, I had, in the midst of all the things I was trying to do, I sent it to the wrong fax number. I could not believe it. It's like multitasking. There's consequences. Now, fortunately, I don't know how I got that number, but she happened to be a health nurse. She didn't say, oh, well, I was about ready to post it on Lost and Found to see who. She says, I'll shred it for you. So I thanked her and I resent it. In Deuteronomy 6:8, it says, and it's talking about the commandments. It says, thou shalt bind them for a sign upon thine hand, and they shall be as frontlets between thine eyes. What you keep, what you focus on, really is where you go. And I'll add this in, throw this in. It's not just where you go, because there was a need to keep it, to bind it, keep it here. Keep those commandments. What you keep here really directs where you go in many respects. But not just you. And I really feel weighty about this. I don't know the feeling, but just as a shot over the bow, what you and I keep here, It's also where we take each other. It's where you take those that are the closest to you. And we really have a responsibility. What you and I do and keep before our eyes in private really is what we impart to each other. Just think about that. It just doesn't affect you. We tend to think I can look and open up to whatever I want to and it won't make any difference. The recent devotion, he said this, just two days ago, once you open the wrong door, everyone belonging to your crowd will suffer. Not just you, folks. David talked about beholding the word of life, and that's in 1 John. And he says that here, that which we have seen and heard, that which our eyes have looked upon, declare we unto you. And they were talking about the word of life. But I really believe it just doesn't stop there. If that's what you're beholding, And that's what you're all about. And that's single in our mind's eye. God, what He's doing, what He's... And I don't mean that in a religious sense, but where that's my resolve. That's really what matters to me. That's what's going to be imparted to those around you. It says here, in 1 Thessalonians, we were willing to have imparted unto you not the gospel of God only, but also our own souls and lives, because ye were dear to us. You know, what we keep there is really what we impart. You can be waxing eloquently with somebody and giving them truth or whatever, but if there's something else going on underneath,
right.
You know what people feel?
Yeah.
Sure. There's something, it's like carrying around a soiled diaper.
Exactly.
You know what? You can say the right things, but what's their impression?
Right.
What really comes through?
Yeah.
What we really convey to each other? Think about it. There's a responsibility we have, not just for my own, to be my own keeper, but to be your keeper as well. We spend a lot of time discussing every winter, you know, germs. And people need to wash their hands and something, you know, sickness, and it just doesn't hit one, it just goes through the camp. And we concern ourselves a lot with that, and I think we should be responsible to do what we can to sterilize whatever. But I'll tell you what you keep before your eyes is far a lot worse than natural germs. In terms of the ability to affect those that you really love, and those that you really care about. It matters what you keep before your eyes. Yeah, I'm going to try to abbreviate this a little bit. What time is dinner normally? Lunch?
Whenever you're done.
You okay back there? Okay. I'm at page 2 now. You know, years ago, my brother and I had a cabinet shop. And we made cabinets, kitchens and stuff. But I could not see a way there. I just couldn't go in that shop and start cutting parts. If you do any sewing, if you do any art project, anything really... I had to visualize it first. I had to see it. And once I could see it, then I could create it. Think about it. Think about where you are today spiritually and where you want to go. What's it going to take? I'm not talking about just see it and believe it, name it and claim it. But I mean where you really keep something out there. This is where God wants me to be, and this is how I'm going to get there. And we did that for a number of years. And then we met a guy that really suggested we stop making our own and we start selling other people's cabinets. There was more money to be made. And what this guy brought to the table, he offered to do a perspective drawing of the kitchen. And I had the hardest time describing, because I could not do it prior to meeting this guy, what this kitchen was going to look like. We made big claims. We were going to build their dreams into a reality. But in the absence of a picture, I came up short. Well, this guy could draw an incredible picture of what this kitchen was going to look like. And it made all the difference in the world. People buy what they see. Never forgot that. Perspective drawings. That's when they asked Jesus, "Where do you live?" You know what he said? He didn't try to describe it. Yeah, come see. You ever have a guy at the store? You asked, and I hate to get lost. I hate to hunt around for stuff at a store. It's like they should know where I think the stuff should be. But you ask somebody and they start describing where it is. It's like I move on to somebody else real quick. The people that are the most that I speak out is someone that says, "Follow me," and they take you there. Makes all the difference in the world what you see, what somebody shows you, right? I got lost one time in D.C., my wife and I. this must have been an angel. He pulls up beside him, and can you help? And this guy, he just said, follow me. It's all he said. If you've ever been in D.C., we were coming out of the Reagan Airport. It's like, whoa, I'm not a big city boy. But I was very grateful to have someone say, follow me. People buy what they see. This is George MacDonald. He says, to try too hard to make people good is one way to make them worse. That the only way to make them good is to be good. Remembering well the beam and the moat. The time for speaking comes rarely. I think this is profound. Not because he said it. Okay? The time for speaking comes rarely. The time for being never departs. Remember well Brother Ernest, in a word, I can't recall who he was talking about, but he was talking about when you're speaking and you're preaching, you give it everything you got. You spend yourself for it, using words if necessary, right? If necessary. It's not what we say. It's what people see. Parents, I'm going to talk to you guys just so you feel awkward. No. When we first came to Whitestone, it was just my two kids and my brother. So anytime there was talk about child raising, it's like, who are you talking about? Now we got so many, it's like you never know who's being targeted, so to speak. But I will say this for child raising. I'll say, if you do speak, mean what you say. Please don't talk, and not have anything to back it up. But the truth is, the real training is not done so much by what they are told. It's what they see mom and dad doing. It's just what we see is very potent. It's a force. It's a driving force in many ways. We're so visual in many ways. Talk about an area here. Prayer is an area specifically, and I'll get, as we head more towards the end, the most important area I think we need to safeguard our vision. But here in prayer, there is a need to see what God is doing. Because you can go into prayer with an idea of how you think the answer is going to come. And you saw that when Peter was in prison and they were fervently praying. And God heard their prayers and he came to the door. It's like they were astounded, like it can't be. You know, it's like, I don't know what they were looking for, but what showed up was not apparently it. And that's sometimes the way prayer is. We go in with a mind frame and we think we have an idea of what God is doing and what the answer is to look like. And if you don't allow God to touch you along the way, and I use the word repurpose. I think it's not that God doesn't answer our prayers frequently, but it's more we have a concept how something should be answered, and we pray that way rather than really praying open-minded. God, what are you really doing here? Yeah. Show me what you really want in this situation, so and get lined up with it, right. And you pray accordingly. Mm-hmm. But it's not that he doesn't answer our prayers as much. At times he repurposes them. He uses that prayer and that groan for a higher purpose. And as things play out, you see that, hey, there's something different here. And you set your sights on really what God is looking for. And I shared this part of this word months back, and afterwards Carol Dufendock, people that attend our meetings, came up and she says she was recalling how their son Curtis, and I was involved, we all were actually, Curtis and his wife really wanted to have their own children. And they tried really for years. They were very faithful. Not just prayer, but they took action. Like they did anything in their power to do. They sought out medical help, spiritual, to really give them children. And she said that's what they were praying for. And the grandparents were praying, give them their own children. But you know, over the process of time, it looked like that wasn't going to happen. And Kurt, and I asked him, I said, how did you do with that? He said, he really came to a place when he could see really what God was wanting. He was going to give them children. He's going to answer their prayer, but he repurposed their prayer with something higher. And they had to go through the process of adopting, and they got beautiful children. And it's important along the way, when you don't see what you're asking for, to make the necessary adjustment, to adjust your sights. This rang home to me once again, hunting. Most of my hunting experiences, sadly, have been, I don't have the trophies. I have a fair amount of dealings. This year I was out, and I pulled out my gun. It was all sighted in, but I found I could not adjust the power on my scope. It just was locked. You know, so something pulls up close, I could adjust it down, something far away. If you're going to hit the mark in your prayer life, you and I have to be willing to make the necessary adjustment when it doesn't appear the way we think it should. Anything you look for, when your perception is unrealized, it can be very demoralizing. I was at the land and I thought how those maybe some of you, right? I never had this, but the five-year vision. And fortunately, some of the places looked like it. And we were benefited from that as well. Because until we got there, people told us, you know, build to stay. We're so thankful for that. There was an adjustment of the vision. They just didn't stick with what they thought it was going to be. Yeah. It can really be demoralizing to stick with something that's in your mind, gets stuck in your mind, and really God is not in it, or he's expanded it and wanting to give you more. Moving along. This is the main priority here. How we view God. How do you really, what's your perception? Is it really trustworthy? Is it really that he's a faithful father? Do you know him as the one that can keep you? He did it there, but can he really? It's like we're in situations like, gosh, I'm in the middle of something now in my natural life with my natural family. I really don't know how it's going to play out. You know why it's difficult? I have a brother that's mentally ill, kind of wreaking havoc with my elderly mom. My dad just passed away. I can't fix this. But you know, it's difficult because I cannot see a path through. I really don't know how it's going to play out. I can tell you how it feels. Where I'm at, from my perspective in this matter, it feels bleak. It really does. This is where the rubber meets the road. Can I apply this to in this situation where I don't see a possible path out or through this time of darkness or uncertainty, not knowing, God, what are you really doing in this matter? Can I trust in his keeping power? The same God that kept me before is going to keep me again? I mean, I got to keep that current. Our view of God matters. And I'll tell you why it really matters in a way. Because I could spend time talking about our view of ourselves. And I thought of this last night when Brother Bill was talking about under the table. Because I think we need help with our view and our perspective of ourselves. And also how we view each other. If we can be very critical and very judgmental. And we need to use the soft lens, so to speak. But I've been under the table. All right? Brother Bill had a dog. I lived with him years ago, and Sister Betty. And they had this dog. What was it?
Irish Setter.
They had this in this big, flat, low table. But any time that dog would misbehave, get out unruly, Brother Bill would say, under the table, Rosie. And that dog would begin in shame to take the lower place under the table. And I do think, honestly, if we're under the table, perhaps it's because of our view of ourself. Yes. And God, it really is wanting to call us out from under the table. If you think about how you hold the view of yourself, and you think about if you're grading hard, you're going to grade others hard as well. But I tell you, and I won't spend any more time on this point, the mother lode deals, I think, I'll submit this, how you really see God, how you really frame God. If you get a hold of your view of God, how you see yourself and how we see each other really will follow suit, I think. So anyway, how do you see him? And we recall the story of the man with the talents and the guy that got the one talent. He just basically, he felt slighted, I guess. He ended up giving back, here you have what's yours. He says, I knew you to be a hard man. I knew you to be a hard man. Now be honest, that we have all gone through things at times where it feels like God is a hard man. It's not all flowers, you know. This is the nuts and bolts of where we live, and we've got to struggle with that kind of view. I knew you to be a hard man. Oswald Chambers also says this, never be sympathetic with a person whose situation causes you to conclude that God is dealing harshly with them. Never be sympathetic with that person. You won't help. I believe here he really viewed the Lord as a hard man because that's what was in his heart. And how you view God deals with what how you treat each other, I think, in many cases. God reflects back to you. God is to you what you and I are to each other. Think about it. To the pure, it says, with the merciful, thou wilt show thyself merciful. With an upright, thou wilt show thyself upright. If you're seeing your God as a difficult taskmaster, always take and never give, ultimately. I mean, if that's the driving, I'm talking about the core belief in you. You need to examine what you're giving out. Because he is to you what you are, what you give out. That's how he shows himself to you. You want to see God merciful? Extend mercy. It says this in 2 Chronicles, and I think this can help change our view of God. It says, for the eyes of the Lord run to and fro throughout the whole earth to show himself strong on behalf of those whose hearts are fully his. Who's he showing himself strong? To those who he knows he has their heart. A perfect heart. How does God appear to you? Think about it. Is he, I mean, in this situation, I'm struggling. It's like, God, I'd like to say, I know you're able. I mean, I know that here, but it's got to get in my feet where he appears faithful. He appears trustworthy. That's how I'm sowing and I'm cultivating to that. But he shows himself strong on behalf of those whose hearts are fully his. Jeremiah 29 says, and this is really his view. It says, for I know the thoughts that I think towards you, saith the Lord. Thoughts of peace. And here they were heading into years of captivity. And this is what God said at the beginning. He had a plan and he had a purpose for taking them the way he was going to take them. Though they may not have understood it. Have you noticed with God, doesn't matter whether you understand it, he's not changing, in case you wondered, right? He says, thoughts of peace and not of evil to give you an expected end. Here that expected end means a cord. Talk about a grasp. They were heading into that, but that expected end means a cord or an attachment. Mm-hmm. That everything God was going to take them through, take us through, it had a purpose. Yeah. Right. And it was to bring you and I where he needed to bring us. And he's going to keep us through that. It's an attachment there. It all connects. Yeah. And it's hard when you're going through something and you don't see the purpose or the significance of it. And I think briefly, I say this, I think the turning point in a difficult situation that looks like it just went from bad to worse is not waiting to see some good before you make that confession. I think a lot of it comes down to our choice and our choosing been my own experience. I don't get myself out of a hole. You know, I can wish for better things to happen, for something to turn. God, I need something to turn. You know, I need to step up and make a choice. God, you are faithful. In spite, before I see it, it's going to take that kind of heart. Because the negativity really will wear me down. It says here in Habakkuk 3:17, it says, "The fig tree shall not blossom," and this is a bleak situation, "neither shall the fruit be on the vines. The labor of the olive shall fail. The field shall yield no meat. The flock shall be cut off from the fold, and there shall be no herd in the stalls yet." Yet. That's a choice. And that means as for me. In spite of all the adversity and the difficulty and a bleak picture, yet. Don't fail to make the yet. Today, that's what's incumbent upon us, to make that kind of choice. Yet. In spite of this, this is my confession. Yet. I will rejoice in the Lord. I will joy in the God of my salvation. Anyway, in conclusion, I'll read this, and you can turn to Psalm or Isaiah 50. You're probably familiar. If we need some help, you know, in the midst of no inspiration, it's hard to be motivated when there's nothing out ahead of you. And that's the time to not make a move on your own, folks. That really is a time to stay in the grasp of God. This says, Who is among you, verse 10, that feareth the Lord, that obeyeth the voice of his servant, that walketh in darkness? I mean, how does that happen? For you to fear God and to walk in obedience, all the obedience that Brother Buddy ever taught us, and yet to have darkness. Only God can engineer that. He can. And hath no light. Let him trust in the name of the Lord and stay on his God. Behold, all ye that kindle a fire, that compass yourself about with sparks, walk in the light of your fire and in the sparks that ye have kindled. This shall ye have of mine hand, ye shall lie down in sorrow. Yeah. And I'll just say this briefly. Watch out, in the absence of something clear from God, don't kindle your own vision. Yeah. It can only lead to just your own view. When God gives a vision, and when he opens your eyes, when he finally does in a situation and you can see what he's doing, he supports that. What originates from me, I'm left having to hold that thing up. And I've seen that over the years. If somebody gets a good idea and they start going with that, it can be a destructive force. And I won't. I had some from Dietrich Bonhoeffer. I'll save it for next time I come through here. In the absence, he was talking about how he spent some time in community and under persecution, and how that, you know, you're pushing your own way can really be a destructive force, because you demand it of yourself, you demand it of others, and all the while it's not something that God really was sponsoring. Anyway, in the absence of a vision, you want to learn to be quiet. Not a time for talking. It's really a time to cultivate that yet. Rejoice in the Lord. I read this, songbirds learn to sing in darkness. And I heard that from Oswald Chambers too. I might as well tell you. But I said, I'm going to follow up on this one though. I'm not just going to buy this. Well, can you learn to sing in darkness? In advance, before you see it. I think that's what God is looking for. Get yourself quiet. Stay. You know, when they were being led across the wilderness, if the cloud tarried, stay. Not a time to strike out on your own. I don't know how they found this research, but this is probably a credible source because it came from Penn State, where I'm from. Anyway, this researcher says songbirds, they learn, it's only the male bird that sings. Any bird people here study birds? Okay. You watch birds. I could never hear birds sing. The first thing that happened to me when I got my hearing aids, I could hear birds sing. It's just like, honestly, it just like it came alive. You mean that was there all along? It's like your vision.
Yeah.
Years have gone by, and you don't realize you've lost your vision. You know, until you have a checkup or a test, and you come up short. But once I had my hearing aids, I could hear birds. It's like, I cannot believe this. What a handicap in the woods to not be able to hear. This guy says, though, they learn to sing from their father. If the bird doesn't hear the voice of the father, and it's not taught by the father, it will sing, but that song will be nothing like an adult bird. It will lack the wealth of acoustic structure. I didn't even know they had that. And there's other consequences, by the way. They will have difficulty finding a mate, because evidently the females like the males that can sing. So, there's a significance. When in darkness, stay put, learn to sing. It says here in Psalm 123, lastly, behold, as the eyes of a servant look unto the hand of their master. As the eyes of a servant look to the hands of their masters. And in the eyes of a maiden unto the hands of her mistress. So our eyes wait upon the Lord our God, until that he might have mercy upon us. Keep your eyes where they need to be. You know, if you sit at a table and you watch somebody's eyes, you can anticipate what they really want, because the eyes are their next move. They tell what the next move is. It's like I've been saying, what you watch is where you go. You know, you can anticipate what somebody wants and furnish that before they even ask for it. And I think that's what God's looking for out of us. He's looking for people that really will keep our eyes where they need to be. I know I am making an effort to restrict what's coming in my life. There are certain things I do not want to see.
Right.
You know, we've all had things that you open to an image, and it's like, it is the hardest thing. And it's like, that quick, we've got to shut the door. To keep our eyes on our master. And that's where there's strength. That's where there's power. So Lord, bless us in the vision today.
Yes.
We asked you, Lord, that in the times of struggling through darkness and not really knowing the way, that we will stay, Lord, that we'll not try to create our own vision, Lord, and sustain ourselves. We ask, Lord, that you would anoint our eyes, Lord, to be able to see your ultimate purpose, Lord, and your intended plan for us in everything you're taking us through. That, Lord, there would be that absolute knowing of you and that perception of you, Lord, and of your keeping grip upon us. In Jesus' name, amen.